RadioInfluence.com.
When you are looking for the best Bucs coverage, why not go to someone who's actually been on the field?
B-U-C-C-A-N-E-E-R-S. Go Bucs!
This is the only podcast for the Buccaneers by a Buccaneer. You are in the trenches with former Buccaneers offensive lineman Ian Beckles on Radio Influence.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to In the Trenches. I am Ian Beckles. We're going to have a lot of fun today. I have a lot of information. We're getting into the nitty-gritty of football season, Buccaneers season, and there's a whole lot of things going on, and some good, some bad, some indifferent. But if you're a Buccaneer fan, I would hope that you tune in every week. It's only the preseason, but we all want to know what's going on in the locker room, you know, on the practice field. I know a little bit about it, not all of it. Not too many people in the media do, but I do hear some things, some rumblings, and you know, in the trenches is all about the inside scoop. And I like to spend a little knowledge too, because I'm one of those crazy people that watches a preseason game three times from beginning to end. So that would make me absolutely a lunatic. So this is my lunatic point of view of our Buccaneers. Here we go. You have to watch out, okay? Watch out for yourself when you're talking about a team being good in the preseason, okay? Now, I know us Buccaneer fans, we're trying to be as optimistic as we can, and that's okay. But this is what you can't do. You can't evaluate your football team in a preseason game that your stars are playing a half. You can't do it, okay? For what we saw out there, do we have a lot more weapons? Absolutely. We might have more weapons than we ever had before. Are we a good football team yet? Nope. Listen, you got to put the ball in the end zone. Jameis has to stop throwing the ball into triple coverage. He did it often. He got away with it couple, three, four times, didn't get away with it once, got lucky at another one. You know, you have to take the good with the bad with Jameis, okay? This is the way it's going to go. If your quarterback is Brett Favre, and let's not compare Jameis to Brett Favre yet, but he has the same mentality. When Brett Favre throws an interception, leave him alone, okay? Because he's going to make some fantastic plays, and he's going to make some bonehead plays as well. That's that gunslinger mentality. They probably use that too much, gunslinger, but Jameis is that. To me, a gunslinger means I ain't scared. And I know this, Jameis ain't scared. And leave him alone. From what I've seen so far in training camp, I don't know whether the Buccaneers are a good football team or a bad football team. I do know they're a talented football team. That doesn't always equate. But the reason why I think the Buccaneers are going to be a good football team this year, I don't know if they're going to be great yet, but the reason why I think they're going to be good is the nucleus of this team. We're starting to develop some leadership on both sides of the football. We have Jameis. We know what Jameis is about. Dirk Koetter, to me, may be the glue. You know, we've gone through some different eras of some funky type stuff with our coaches. You know, Greg Schiano. We went through that, toes on the line. Our quarterback was Josh Freeman. You see the difference between Dirk Koetter and Jameis and, you know, Greg Schiano and Josh Freeman? We had Raheem Morris, stayed in the club. I know Dirk Koetter ain't in the club. I know he's not. You know what Dirk Koetter's doing? Studying, trying to figure out ways for his team to get better. I know he is, because that's his mentality. Lovie Smith, who's been through some stuff, has an okay pedigree. They didn't buy into Lovie Smith. You heard it. When you're interviewing defensive players and they're talking about this system and whether it works or not, you never heard that about Tony Dungy's defenses. Never. That's the reason why Lovie Smith and his regime didn't work. So I think the Bucs are going to be good this year, not from what I've seen so far in the preseason, because it hasn't been that much. I think the Bucs are going to be good this year because of Dirk Koetter and Jameis Winston and guys like Quan Alexander, you know, and Brett Grimes and Hargraves and some of these other names that are starting to emerge. But I think they have better football players. But what you've seen so far in preseason doesn't equate to 10-6. It does not. They have a lot of improving to do, a lot. Now, I know all you Buccaneer fans out there have been watching Hard Knocks as I have. Been watching it religiously. There's only been a couple, three of them so far. If you're a Buccaneer fan, you're not going to miss that. I know you're not. And there's a few things that stood out to me. And I find it enjoyable and a little bit comical, too. Some of the things that were I thought were comical was Brett Grimes, they're interviewing him. First of all, I give him love because he's in an old-school Buccaneer shirt. I got to give anybody love that's wearing that shirt. And then his wife, Miko, comes up. Now, you know, I hear a lot of people like, oh, she's interesting and she's funny. She's foul, okay? She's foul. You're somebody's wife. Here's the rule. Shut up. You're not a player. Shut up. We need to hear Miko Grimes cursing like a sailor. That's not impressive to me at all. And the way she was talking, she was basically saying, I'm his boss. If you didn't hear that, you weren't listening. Listen to me closely, okay? She says she checks into the hotel on the road, the same hotel. That doesn't work out, okay? She checks in the same hotel, goes out to eat on the way trips with him. Girlfriend, loosen up a little bit. Loosen that leash up a little bit. Come on now. That's ridiculous. I think Miko Grimes hopefully is going to have a good season, she's not playing. Brett Grimes is going to have a great season, but it's not because of Miko Grimes. I don't know. It was giving me the willies watching her. I'm like, dude, let that go. She crazy. She cray cray. And she wants to be more in the limelight than he does. And in the interview, he barely said shit. He barely talked. Like, she don't even let him talk. After the first week, I would say, Miko, you got to go. You got to go. I'm sorry. You talk too much, and I'm tired of listening to you. So there's a lot of things that happened in Hard Knocks. Obviously, the big thing was Roberto Aguayo getting cut. I feel bad for the kid that gets cut in front of everybody. Nobody wants that. But, you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to see that the kid lost his confidence, okay? He's lost his confidence. He has the yips. And they were showing his kicks from last year. His stroke ain't right. It doesn't look like the stroke of a good kicker. It's almost abrasive and choppy. You know, I'm not a kicking coach, but I know that doesn't look like a good stroke. Like, you don't have to be a golf coach, and when you look at a stroke, you're like, that doesn't look good. That's what Aguayo's, you know, stroke looked like. He lost his confidence, and I said this last time, he needs a sports psychiatrist or psychologist, whichever one, to get his mind right. He just needs to relax. He'll have no damn confidence. And if you say to the Buccaneers, you know, do you have any weaknesses right now? You have to say kicking game because, you know, Folk is out there. Congratulations, Nick Folk, but you didn't beat nobody out. Nick Folk didn't beat anybody out. Aguayo beat himself out, period. And if Ian Beckles was the backup kicker, I'd be the kicker right now, regardless, because Aguayo can't make it. He's not going to make it. Not this year anyways. He needs to go away for a little bit, get his mind right, and that's it. But in two games in a row, when you leave 4 points out there, an extra point and a field goal, both games, those are games that you lose. You lose games like that. You go out, you miss a field goal, miss an extra point, go out and look. You lose a lot of those football games. So, you know, the Bucs had the lowest field goal percentage last year because of Aguayo. So that's obviously somewhere they need to improve. And it hasn't improved yet, and that's getting scary. You know, watching Hard Knocks, it kind of brings back some memories of training camp, some good, mostly bad. You know, leaving your family in training camp is tough. When I played here in Tampa, it wasn't that bad because I could just kind of head over to my house. I live here in South Tampa, so I wasn't too far away. And 1 year, Sam Weich even let us go home. It was crazy. Sam White said, if you're an experienced player and you had more than 3 years starting, you're allowed to go home. I didn't go into my dorm room not one time. I didn't bring not a blanket in there. I just went home every single time, and that was the best camp ever. Because nobody wants to go in those stinking UT little rooms with the little bitty beds. Nothing. There's nothing good out there. And what's tough is when you're away from your family. A lot of times your families are in a different city. When I had to go to Philadelphia, you know, you got to go away for a month and you don't see your family for the whole time. Your kids are young. And I remember when I first saw my daughter, who at that time would have been 9 months old, after camp, you know, a month is a long time for a young kid. So when I first saw her, I'm like, put my arms out. She kind of looked at me. I'm like, come on, please recognize me, please. And then finally she recognized me. But, you know, that would have hurt my feelings if she didn't recognize me after a month. But kids are funny. But being away from your family for that long is a tough situation. And, you know, it's good to have the comfort of your family and all that kind of stuff when you're going through it, in a way. But not if you're, if your wife is Meiko Grimes. I'm not talking about that. Definitely not. Now, a lot of people were featured in that Hard Knocks show. It was a lot of Gerald McCoy, a lot. My guy Jason Hallfish, who I love his work, is an artist that does a lot of things. He's done a lot of things in our dignitary headquarters here. He did some shoes for Gerald McCoy, which I thought were amazing. I think those were incredible Hulk shoes. But, you know, I think McCoy's a big, you know, superheroes guy, and his guy is Batman. Like, to me, if you got a choice of all superheroes, I'm not sure why anybody would pick Batman. Like, to me, like, when they came out with that movie, Superman versus Batman, in real life, Superman kills Batman in 1 second. Batman only has a belt. That's it. So if I have superpowers, I'm going to want a belt. Superman can pick up the Earth. I've seen Superman fly around the Earth in 3 seconds, and you have a belt? Don't put Superman against Batman. It's just not a good movie, which they've done already. One young man who's becoming popular, Riley Bullock, I believe his name is, from Michigan State, Joe Dirt. You know, his mother was on there, sweet lady, and she didn't like everybody calling him Joe Dirt. She wanted everybody to call him Fabio. And, you know, the unfortunate part for Riley Bullock is that, you know, all the players are going to watch every Hard Knocks, and there's going to be some kind of memes in the locker room of his face or his likeness with Fabio's hair on it. I know it. I've been in locker rooms before, and there's no wickeder place than a locker room. And believe it or not, there's a lot of creative people out there that can do creative stuff in an NFL locker room. So I think Riley Bullock is definitely getting his balls busted. Now, because he's so high profile in this Hard Knocks, and he's high profile because, you know, they could tell he's somebody everybody's going to, you know, gravitate towards. And I hear it already. I can hear somebody go, hey, what do you think about Riley Bullock? And I mean, I go, you know, the third string linebacker? You know, I don't think about him that much. Now, I've been watching him. With the threes, he has a nose for the ball, for sure. But you have to understand this. If you come in a football game and you're the third-string middle linebacker, regardless what you did in the game, you're the third-string middle linebacker. And every practice that they have in training camp, that's an opportunity for you to become the second-string middle linebacker. And he didn't get that done. So for me, the big indication is going to be, for me, special teams and Riley Bullock. And I've been watching him. He's done okay. But I'm looking to see if he's on the starting lineup for special teams, because for him to make the football team, he's got to be on all the special teams. I'm talking kickoff return, punt, punt return, all of them. Because he's not going to really get on the field. They're not going to take Quan Alexander off the field. So if Riley Bullock makes a team, he has to make it on special teams. And for rookies out there, the first thing I always tell them is, boy, excel on special teams. If you could, I've seen people stick around the league for 10 years being primarily special teams players and good ones. And he can make a mark with himself for sure. So everybody has their eyes on Riley Bullock, Joe Dirt, a.k.a. Fabio. Now, Gerald McCoy was, I think this in the second Hard Knocks, was mic'd up. And, you know, I watched all the games so far, both games. And the first game, he did zero, okay? And they had him mic'd up, and the funny part was they didn't show any of him on the field. They just showed him on the sideline. And I thought that was very telling, because after the game, I'm like, I didn't think he played very well. And, you know, he didn't make a play to where they show anything on the field. There was him on the sideline joking around, stuff like that. He wasn't mic'd up for the second game and played very, very well. So that's kind of the way Gerald McCoy plays. A lot of it's up and down, but we need some consistency. And this is my thing, okay? I've been in the Tampa Bay area since 1990, and I've watched every Buccaneer game, and I listen to all the media, and I listen to all the shows, and on everything I love. Every year with Gerald McCoy, the same things are said. Every single year, this is what's said. Gerald McCoy has the best get-off in football, and I agree. Gerald McCoy is a disruptor. I don't agree with that. You're not there to be a disruptor. You're there to make plays. Gerald McCoy is unblockable. This is preseason now. What people don't realize is, in practice and in preseason, everything's very vanilla. The quarterbacks are going on the same count. He's jumping the count. Once you get to the regular season, it's going to be a lot different, okay? Every preseason, he goes off. Every preseason. He's unblockable. He's this, he's that. And I think he makes the Pro Bowl in the preseason. Because when the regular season comes, and you can say I'm wrong, but I want to see some statistics to show me I'm wrong. Every year they talk about, this is the year. We got so-and-so. They're going to help Gerald with his rush. Okay, go back in the history of football and look at any good pass rusher and tell me who they needed beside him. If you're a great pass rusher, you're a great pass rusher. And you can't be blocked. That's it. You don't need anybody, okay? And every year, this is the year he's going to get double figures and blah, 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 and it doesn't happen. So this year, at the end of the year, he's probably going to have 8 sacks, 35 tackles, and he's going to make the Pro Bowl. Back in the day when I played, that wasn't enough. That wasn't enough. We had auxiliary. We had backup players get those statistics. Brad Culpepper, who was hardly Gerald McCoy, had those type numbers. You know, people like Marcus Jones had better numbers than that. Chidi Ohana, too, had better numbers than that. Simeon Rice, way better. Warren Sapp, way better. And stop comparing them. They keep on comparing Gerald McCoy to Warren Sapp. Stop. Stop. It's not fair to either one of them. So, listen, I want Gerald McCoy to go off as much as everybody thinks he does. Trust me. If he had 15 sacks in a year, my God, he may get Defensive Player of the Year, okay? Because he's had below average statistics and has been making Pro Bowls to this point. So I'd like to see a little bit more. And another thing, superstars don't come off the field. If you look at the NFL, you look for greatness. When I say greatness, I'm talking about Khalil Mack. I'm talking about J.J. Watt. I'm talking about Aaron Donald. You know, Geno Atkins. Watch them and see if they ever come off the field. Gerald takes a lot of series off. Don't like it. That's for me. I don't think I've ever seen a Pro Bowl defensive lineman come off the field. I played against a lot of Pro Bowlers. I played against a lot of Hall of Famers. Believe me, I wish Reggie White would have come off the field. He didn't. Never. For any reason. Or none of the other guys I ever played against. John Randall never came off the field. What I mean never, never. He didn't miss a play. He didn't miss a series. He didn't miss a beat, period. So I'd like to see him stay on the football field. I think they're doing that to preserve him. That's fine. But greatness to me does not come off. Greatness won't come off the field. He won't. You can't go and try to get J.J. Watt off the field. See what happens. Now, coming up is the third preseason game, and people wonder why that's the most important one. It's not just because, you know, the starters are going to play the most, which they are. The starters are going to go into the third quarter. That's what most teams do. But this is the first preseason game that you actually game plan. Game planning mean you sit down, you watch the opponent, you're making plays to suit their scheme. You're trying to trick them. In the first two preseason games, you're just calling plays. You find out what defense they call, you just call plays and that's it. There's not going to be a lot of audibling or anything like that. The third preseason game is a game that looks the most like a normal NFL game. And I'm looking forward to see them going into the second half. They didn't do very well in the red zone, okay? I don't know if I'm worried about that yet because I think Mike Evans, to me, is a difference maker. There's been a couple times here in the preseason where Jameis has been off his mark going at Mike Evans and, you know, towards the end zone. I think Jameis is going to get that right. He got it right last year. But I don't think I'm going to worry about the red zone thing yet. If the Bucs can run the football, I think they're going to be just fine. So, you know, looking at this preseason, what you have to watch out, once again, about evaluating your team and assessing your team, playing the Jacksonville Jaguars first and foremost, was told that they couldn't stop the Bucs in practice at all. And, you know, I have a buddy of mine lives in Jacksonville that's a Jaguar fan, and he texts me probably halfway through that game, and he goes, "You think we're as bad as we look?" And I go, I think, unfortunately, you are. Jacksonville sucks. Blake Bortles sucks, okay? He really does. Like, Blake Bortles, I don't know how many years he's played, but he ain't got more than a handful of good games. If he was a fourth-round pick, he'd have been cut ages ago. Seriously. So, you know, don't assess your team by a preseason game against a really crappy football team. Now, if you look around the NFL and you say, think about this. How many cities do you believe are optimistic that they're going to make the playoffs? Out of 32, how many cities do you think that believe they're going to make the playoffs? Let me give you the number. Every team except for Jacksonville, Cleveland, who are going to be playing now. So if we shred up Cleveland, relax yourself. Jacksonville, Cleveland, Chicago, the Jets, and San Francisco. Those are the only five teams I could come up with that will believe. I don't think their fan base believes they're going to the playoffs. I don't even know if their players do either. You know, back in the day when I played, we would have been on all those lists as well. But every other team is going to believe they go to the playoffs. Okay, that's so there's 27 teams in 27 cities thinking they're going to the playoffs. And only if, you know, they can't all go. So just being good enough to go is not enough. So the Buccaneers got to go on the field 16 times and prove themselves. And sometimes that is very, very tough. You know, watching football now, to me, it's amazing. You know, the Bucs brought out this kid, Griffin, the quarterback. And the kid took five hits and was gone. He took five hits and was done. How did Brett Favre play that long without missing a game? How did that happen? How does Tom Brady not ever miss a game? It's weird, isn't it? And I think the unfortunate part is greatness and durability, I think, is linked with insanity. Because you can't tell me Brett Favre didn't get a concussion. He had to. Giselle Bundchen has told us that, you know, Brady's had concussions. Of course he has. The kid takes five hits and then he's gone. If you, you know, if you take five hits and you're in the cold tub, then you're cut. We can't expect you to be a backup and us, you know, depend on you. So times are tough for these young kids, man. It seems like a lot of these young kids get their chance and they get in there and they take a couple blows and they don't want to take no more. This is not for me. So if you have to step out of a preseason game, it doesn't look good for you. It's going to be tough sledding. A couple other things I loved in Hard Knocks. They had Nick Folk out there fishing. And I don't know whether he's going to be our kicker or not, but he just right now he's winning just because, okay? He hasn't been all that damn great either. But, you know, being an old school fish, you know, guy who fishes, he was out there catching crappie and sunfish up north with a Zebco reel. They had some film of him, and I go, that's beautiful. I don't think anybody even knows what a Zebco reel is, but I used to fish with those way back in the day. So I like anybody that fishes, so I'm going to be pulling for Nick Folk. Other things I loved was Jason Light. When he was talking about Aguayo, it had to be tough for Jason Light and Aguayo because, listen, he put his ass out there with Aguayo and some. If you pick a kicker in the second round, you can't miss. You can't. He has to be a perennial something, but he's got to play 10 years. If you get him in the second round, there's so many other needs that the Bucs have. Pass rusher, you could always use another offensive lineman. You could always use another DB, okay? And you went and got a kicker who sucks. What's tough was, you know, on Hard Knocks, you're listening to Jason Light talk about Aguayo and, you know, talking about it in a terrible light. And it's got to be tough for him because nobody was a bigger fan of Aguayo than Jason Light. I mean, he was hoping the hell, he was probably like, please. But it got to a point where it was a no-brainer. The kid had to go. Got picked up in Chicago, and I don't believe he played all that well the other day. I didn't see it. But nobody's going to start their football season with that kid. They're just not going to. I hope he makes it. I hope he does. I saw a couple interviews with him. I'm going to say this. Nice kid, but he doesn't get it. He doesn't get whatever it is, he doesn't get it. It's either you make the kicks or not. This is what nobody wants to hear. Excuses. Nobody gives a rat's ass while you're missing kicks. And if you miss nine kicks in a year, you got to be humble with it. And he just doesn't get it. And whether he resurfaces again, we'll see. Whether he makes the Bears team again, we'll see. Now, I do a lot of different, events for the Buccaneers. Not a lot. I do a few here and there. One that I do every year is Women in Red. And, you know, we go to, you know, we go to the Raymond James Stadium, and they'll put, you know, a former Buccaneer in some certain stations. They had O.J. Howard up there. They had Ali Marpet up there on the stage. And basically they roll in a bunch of ladies, some girls, some ladies, and they come through and they do different football drills and, you know, women that love football, and that's a good thing. And I basically was on a station where they had some football helmets. They had Jameis's helmet. You could put it on and listen to, you know, the audio of what the coaches are going to be saying, which is kind of cool. But I didn't do much of that. They had some young kids doing that, and I was just standing there with my picture there, old school Ian and number 62. So people come up, and whether they knew me or not, would look up and say, can I take a selfie or can I take a picture? So basically for 3 hours, I took selfies, and I got groped by old black ladies a lot. They're like, ooh, who are you? Put your arm around at the hand. They had the hand all on my ass. Like Taylor Swift, did that happen to? I felt like Taylor Swift for 3 hours, which is okay. I like the ladies. But let me say this, okay? I was there last year, and I was there the year before, I believe. Maybe it's just 2 years, but it's different now. The feel is different, and people are happy. And I like to see Buccaneer fans happy. And I'm going to say this. Buccaneer fans deserve to go to the playoffs, and they deserve a good football team. But unfortunately, that's not enough. So, you know, after I'm going through 3 hours of, you know, women groping me and taking selfies with me, I went and talked to this young lady who was across the way. And she's one of the young ladies. She's one out of four people that actually make the NFL schedule. And she was kind of explaining how it all happens. And I'm talking about hieroglyphics and, I don't know, German. It was crazy. The equations they have to go through. And they got four people. It takes 3 months. And the computers work 24 hours a day for them to get the schedule. Because you know how many factors involved with that? There's locations. There's traveling. There's bye weeks. Oh, I couldn't imagine. I couldn't imagine where to start. Like, you have to, she said, I go, where do you start? She says, you start with the last Super Bowl winners, and you usually want to have them involved in the first, you know, televised game. And then you go from there, and I'm like, it just hurts my mind. As somebody who does math in his head, that was hurting my mind a little bit. But it was nice to see all the women out there. And there's way more women that love football than I thought, okay? Way more. And this is the irony of it. I actually, I like to talk football. Obviously, I've been on the radio for a long time. And I know women love football. And I've done this one time before. I think we did it at Shula's way back when. But I'm going to have a football 101, kind of a chalk talk for women. And it's going to be September 7th. It's going to be at Cheval Country Club. And it's going to be from 6 to 8. Be quick and fast, we'll get in and out of there. And I'm going to have a bunch of women there hanging out, having a couple cocktails, a couple snacks. And I'm going to be explaining football. And I know a lot of women know a lot of football. You'll learn a lot. And some people, women don't know anything about football. You'll definitely learn a lot. But it's just good to get versed, you know, when you're around a bunch of people, whether it be men or women, have some answers. Because I think a lot of people throw out a lot of terms, and I'm talking about guys too. They throw out a lot of terms and they don't know what they mean. Like, how many times do you hear three technique? And some people just don't know what it means. It's nice to know what it means. It's nice to know what cover two means. It's nice to know what constitutes a blitz. Little things like that. Because I'll be honest with you, women, a lot of the guys don't know, okay? They don't know what it is. They just use those words, but they don't know what the hell they're talking about. So September 7th, 6 to 8, we're going to be at Cheval Country Club. And if you want to purchase tickets, it's chevalgac.com. That's chevalgac.com. And it's September 7th, 6 to 8. So if you women want to go out there and learn a little bit about football, definitely want to check me out. Or you can check out my social media. I always have the flyers out there at Ian Beckles. Now, speaking of social media, you know, if you want to, you know, become friends, it's at Ian Beckles. And I had a young man I was going back and forth with this week. And I like back and forth. I really do. I really do. And he said to me, and his question was this, Ian, has the Buccaneers ever had a tight end as good as O.J. Howard? And my answer was, yes, all of them. And he says, you always say that, but there's no way this guy is going to miss. You're not watching, okay? You're not watching. Anybody has the ability to miss. The first pick in the draft has missed often. Have I liked what I saw about O.J. Howard to this point? Sure. But has it been a lot? No. Have I heard good things about O.J. Howard? Sure. But that's not enough. There's so many factors involved with a kid being a good football player for more than a year or two. Once again, if you had a nickel for anybody that's been good for a year or two, you would have a lot, right? You would have a lot of money. But some guys don't make it. Some guys don't have it. Great example, Austin Seferian Jenkins. I bring up his name. Got a great name. I think his name is one of the best ever. How long did we talk about him being a good football player? 4 years? And I saw right off the bat, he ain't going to make it. He's soft. I haven't seen that about O.J. Howard. But in order for you to be a great football player, you have to be a tough son of a bitch. You have to be able to play hurt. Pressure can't get to you. There's a lot of things out there. Listen, I hope O.J. Howard is a great football player, because if he's great, then we have a lot of weapons out there. But you have to watch yourself when you pencil somebody in as a rookie and dub them great right away, because that's not the way it goes, unfortunately. Let me give you a great example. Like, everybody wants to look at the draft and they want to say, well, this is a great draft because we got this kid in the first round. Knowing very well most of your team is constituted of, you know, second, third, fourth, fifth, seventh. It used to be 12 rounds. Free agents used to be great football players at times. I have a perfect example. We have a young man that's not that young, but he retired today. It's Anquan Boldin, okay? As far as football players go, he's got to be top 10 for me of all times. Is he flashy? Nope. Is he fast? Nope. Don't even know what he is, but I want him on my team, period. I love the way he plays, blocks, grimy, doesn't need any separation. You want me to give you some statistics? I got some statistics for you. Once again, people get enamored. I don't know who the kid got drafted that ran the best 40. He just got drafted. Everybody wants him to be a star. But he wasn't a star in college. Anquan Boldin was a star in college. No doubt about that. At the combine, out of 40 wide receivers, Anquan was last in the 40. Dead last out of 40. Okay? In the shuttle, which is very important as well. Second to last. So, you know, Anquan Boldin ended up being the 54th pick in the draft. Now, during the draft, is everybody going to say, we're going to be great because of Anquan Boldin? Probably not, but that was the case. Because there's things that you can't measure. Whatever the hell you can't measure, Anquan Boldin got that. You know, we have to hear of people playing because my shoulder hurts. My shoulder's sore. Anquan Boldin played with a broken jaw. When I mean broken, I mean shattered. And still went out there. Couldn't keep him off the field worth a darn. And I don't remember him ever dropping anything, ever. And just was a reliable person for 14 years. We're talking about the slowest 40, second slowest shuttle, and he's going to end up with 14 years under his belt and ninth overall in the history of the NFL in receptions. Don't know if he'll be a Hall of Famer, buddy. His name's coming up. He's got a good chance. If you're ninth in the NFL in receptions, that's a good start to make it to the Hall of Fame. So my hats off goes to Anquan Boldin, and I just like the way the kid played. Every year that he was up for a free agent, I always said, like, why don't the Bucs sign Anquan Boldin? Why not? Like, what would it hurt? He's going to come in here, going to catch his 50 balls at the end of his career. He's going to make everybody tougher, and to me, he's going to make everybody better as well. Now, looking around, some of the things that were happening in preseason, to me, you've seen the Buccaneers give the ball to Doug Martin a lot, okay? And everybody's saying, well, they're going to give him a lot of runs now because he's going to be off, he's going to be suspended, I think, the first three games, and they're trying to get him in shape. That's not what they're doing, to me. They're making him, he's auditioning, okay? Because he's playing against guys that I think are as good or better. So you're going to be missing three games, so we don't really have any allegiance to you anymore because your statistics aren't that damn good anymore. He's actually looked okay so far, okay? But he's going to have to earn his spot, and I think that's a good thing. Not automatic. Nothing is automatic. Ali Marpet, who's playing at center, He missed the last game, the two games ago, played this week, and I was watching him intently. I was, my eye was on him, and I rewound it, and every play I watched him, okay? Because Ali Marpet was moved from right guard, which was my old spot, to center. Okay, I'm going to say this. Center is a more important position, period. I don't want Tony Mayberry to hear that, because I probably would have told him he was full of crap back in the day. But center is a more important position than right guard, okay? Ali Marpet looks extremely natural at center. Extremely. Once again, it's only a preseason game, but from what I can see, my eye, and my eye's pretty good. He looks very natural. He looks very strong. His hand placement was great. So to me, sometime in his career, he probably has played center. Because I tried to switch at the end of my career, and I certainly could not do it. So I had, you know, concerns about Marpet changing positions. Those concerns are gone. I mean, I'm good. What they did was, I was watching some different plays with the offensive line. Damar Dotson, I thought he played okay for two weeks in a row, but they brought this other kid, Benenok, I believe, number 77, who looked like a really good run blocker, but it's really stiff in the pass game. Really stiff in the pass game. So I don't know what they're doing. It looked like they're kind of auditioning him too to maybe take, you know, Damar Dotson's spot. I don't think he did enough to do that. But obviously there's something going on there. Listen, Damar Dotson is getting on in age, probably doesn't have that many more years in him, so maybe they're starting to think about the future, but I didn't think that Benenok did enough to take over his position. Now, the Buccaneers are so loaded at wide receiver now, and I don't think I've ever said that before, but they got a lot of talent in wide receiver. They really do, and that's exciting. And that's got to be exciting for Jameis as well. Mike Evans, who I can say this, he's a bona fide star. On any team, any situation, any system, I don't care, Mike Evans is a star. Last year, Mike Evans was targeted 175 times. That's 50 too many, okay? Those other 50 got to be sprinkled around to O.J. Howard and DeSean Jackson and whoever, and Cameron Brate, whoever else it may be, Humphreys. But 175 targets is too many. Because, you know, when you got one guy like that and you're looking at a defense, it's not rocket science. We're going to cheat the safety that way. And what happens is Jameis, you know, Mike Evans becomes his crutch because he knows, you know, in a tough situation, Mike Evans is going to bail him out. But then he catch himself forcing things. And that's where the turnovers come. And like I said earlier in the show, you're going to get some turnovers with Jameis. That's going to happen. Don't take that out of his blood. That's in his blood. Now, the one throw he made when he was parallel to the ground, don't make that throw. Like, nobody's ever made that throw, okay? Don't attempt that throw. But it's hard with somebody with that mentality to concede. Like, he doesn't have the mentality to concede. So, leave him alone. His coach will get in his ass. He will. It's not going to change anything, though, because Jameis is the kind of guy, I believe he always thinks he can make the play. And don't take that out of his blood. Now, Sweezy is another guy who's playing in my old position, right guard. I've been watching him. He does some really good things. He does some really poor things, too. Now, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt because he missed all of last season. So he looks a little bit rusty. Maybe his back is still getting back into it. But when you miss a whole season, it takes you a while to get back into things. So far, offensively, defensively, we're playing well enough for everybody to continue to be optimistic, okay? We're staying away from injuries. That's very important. We got to get a little better in the red zone. Maybe Jameis needs to start throwing into some triple coverage. That's happened probably too many times at this point. But other than that, I mean, I feel good. I feel good about the Buccaneers' year. Like I said before, the Buccaneer fans deserve a good football season, but we're not the ones out there playing. But I feel good. I feel good about this season, and I feel good about where they are right now. Now, I have another podcast, which is Flavor in Your Ear, also on Radio Influence. You can go check me out on that. We talk a little bit of sports. We talk a little bit about Hard Knocks, some politics, some pop culture, the whole nine yards. But if you're a football fan, it's all about In the Trenches. We'll be doing this every single week right after the Buccaneers game. So Monday for the first little while, and then the day after the Buccaneers game. He definitely wants you to tune in for that. For you ladies, I want to check out Football 101 for Women, September 7th, 6 to 8. ChevalGAC.com. That's ChevalGAC.com. I'm going to have a special guest. I'll let you know next week who that's going to be. It's going to be a former player. I was trying to get Martin Gramatica, but he's coaching his son's soccer team, so I understand wholeheartedly he couldn't make it. But Buccaneers have another game this week against another terrible football team. Cleveland's not going to be good, so let's hope the Buccaneers trounce them and they move on, because the third preseason game is the most important one in the preseason, because that fourth one these days, they shut her down. They completely shut her down. Anyway, it's been wonderful talking to you people. It's been Ian Beckles in the Trenches. I hope you guys tune in next week. Have a wonderful week, and please be safe. Peace out.
Follow Ian Beckles on Twitter at Ian Beckles for all the latest on your Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You have been in the Trenches with Ian Beckles on Radio Influence. This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
People that want to see Colin play in the league again because they're a fan of what he did and his social activity, well, that's different. We're talking football. Football people are concerned about putting the best football team together. And while you look and you may say, well, he's better than this backup guy who I never heard of, you never heard of him. But remember that as a backup quarterback in the league, Colin is in a very big disadvantage because teams are not in a position. It's tough enough to build and develop one offense in the NFL. You're not going to be able to develop two. So you're going to have to change your offense for a backup quarterback, and you can't do that. That makes no sense, and it's completely misunderstood by the fans and the media who really don't know football. You can't just have an offense that you run in certain blocking schemes and route concepts, and then your quarterback injured, your backup quarterback is Colin Kaepernick, and he's got to run and freelance and do something different. You don't have time to develop two. So you have to have a quarterback who can run the same offense as your starter. So that eliminates most teams in the league from a football standpoint for Colin Kaepernick. I think that Seattle's offense, I think Carolina's offense were two offenses where I think he would have been a really good fit as a backup quarterback. It's pretty clear to me that the reason they don't want him has to do with off the field distractions. Do they want to deal with a quarterback that you're going to have a lot of media distractions about what he's going to do, what he did do, what he's going to do in the future? And people don't want that type of distraction for a backup quarterback. It's the same reason why people didn't want to fool with Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow's case, Tim Tebow's not as good a quarterback as Colin Kaepernick. But he still fit the distraction mode that now Colin Kaepernick occupies. So it's not a good fit for the locker room in most cases. Now, let's get to the issue of the political and social element that certain owners are turned off by. And some owners that, quite frankly, there's some that don't care, that just want to win. But they are getting affected, and quite frankly are getting more affected than I ever thought by hearing it from their sponsors that say, we don't want this guy. As a fan, as a sponsor, we don't want this guy representing our city and our team. And I think it's having an effect. I think it's having an effect. Certainly had an effect in Baltimore, who I think would have been willing with John Harbaugh, the brother of Jim, to bring in Colin Kaepernick as a football staff. Ozzie Newsome, John Harbaugh would have been willing to bring him in absence of Joe Flacco. And the owner, I can tell you, Steve Bisciotti, was on board with bringing him in until he started to hear from some of his sponsors. And then from an owner standpoint, he's got to decide, we're going to bring this guy in as a backup until Joe Flacco gets back, and we're going to upset the apple cart of our fan base and, more importantly, our sponsors that are putting a lot of money, and we're going to alienate them for a short term and for a guy that not everybody's convinced is all that as a football player. That's where the problem is. So for people who say, and you hear them say, it's all political and there's nothing about football, those people don't know what they're talking about. Okay, because there is a football element to this that doesn't fit for a lot of teams, as I've explained. The people that say it has nothing to do with the political stuff and it's all football, that's not correct either. Because as I've said, I think there are a couple of places where he would have been a good fit. But politically or socially or from a management standpoint, sponsorship, not a good fit. So keep that in mind. It's never as simple. It's not usually as black and white as people think. It's a lot of gray area. But I hope that gives an idea.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and, of course, RadioInfluence.com.